This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 6th of November, 1953. The title of this lecture is Space Demonstration, Havingness, Energy, etc., Part 1. This tape is 24 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly, as did the original master recording.
All right, this is a November 6th afternoon lecture. You know, some people have to have a method by which something is done merely because they have been convinced that by others that a certain method has to be used in order to accomplish a certain effect. Nobody has ever really brought forward the method of simply saying it was going to happen and it happened. Quite the reverse. Parents have been known to say, well, you can't have it just by wishing for it. This, by the way, has a tendency to do something to the way people's mock-ups disappear and appear. You can't have something just by wishing for it. It's the only way you can have anything. Just saying you have it. I don't think that a deed of title does anything more than say you have it. Well, that's other responsibility and other determinism. So people get to a point where they require other determinism. Now I'll give you a slight demonstration of this. Mock up a big piece of nothing in front of you. Now get somebody else coming along and making it disappear. Is that easier than making it disappear yourself? Well,
harder.
That's harder.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Why? Why is it harder? That's yours. That's right. So we tie in ownership with wishing. Blow it up. Make it disappear. All right, get somebody else putting up a cube of nothingness in front of you. And have them make it disappear. Really? Well, we're running right immediately on the central postulate. What's mine's mine, what's yours is yours, and what's theirs is theirs. And that's the way it all is. And although we can't tell the difference between what's mine and yours is yours, we're still going to get this. Yes, sir. Otherwise we'd have a terrible condition. See how that is? So let's realize this with machinery. The automatic machines, the beautiful automatic machines which send you every time you think. Every time you want to go, they send you there. Every time you want a picture, they give you one. And that is the main one because that is the one that is sitting under handing out facsimiles to you. That is that beautiful precision, if you ever get to puzzling about the beautiful precision with which you will get a picture of something you think about. Just mock up a machine a few times, which gives you a beautiful picture every time you think about something, and then make it disappear. And have somebody else mark up a beautiful picture for you, a beautiful machine for you, that gives you a beautiful picture every time you think of something, and have them make it disappear. That's automaticity, direct solution. Now, what's an engram system? An engram system is what the machines that other people tried to give you. And just like Burke did here a minute ago, he says it's theirs. It's mine, rather, he said. Therefore, I'm not going to make them disappear. This is also true. It's theirs, therefore I'm not going to make it disappear. You're immediately into randomity. No randomity exists unless it's theirs. You have to have a theirs for randomity, so you get other people's problems being the only problems there are. Of course, they think you have problems, but you knew basically you never did have any problems. Well, all right, let's take this matter of this automatic piece of machinery which sends you any place you want to go, or which gives you beautiful pictures, so on. It's just composed of postulates and hidden and made to disappear and forgotten about by the Thetan. And the Thetan, though, is sticking around saying, now, they made a lot of machines for me, and by golly, they can make them disappear. I'll give you a little test of this. Get some idea of your mother being out in front and have her make a machine disappear. Have your mother out in front again. She makes a machine disappear. And your mother in back of you, she makes a machine disappear. I didn't tell you to put a machine there. She just makes one disappear. And have your father out in front of you and have him make a machine disappear. Have your mother out in front of you making your father's machine disappear. You get the idea. People are waiting around who have been in the armed services, waiting for more officers and so forth to make machines disappear. It's theirs, isn't it? Well, that's the only thing there is about responsibility. Responsibility comes in immediately. Responsibility has to be lowered if one is to have randomity. If one has control of both sides of a chessboard, he can't play chess. Not worth a nickel. Not unless he gets very skitsy. He has to forget what move he made before he can make the new move, and he still has a little sneaking hunch like he may be remembered. Now, there is immediately responsibility. If he takes responsibility for both sides of the board, he gets no action. He gets no randomity. He's interested in action and in randomity, so he takes only one side of the board. Immediately, he cuts his responsibility in half. Now, what happens in life to an individual? Every time he seeks out something for randomity, he cuts his responsibility for it. The first way, then, he can do this, be made to do this, is simply to have him say, I can't do anything about it. You've immediately had him sort something out for responsibility. I mean, randomity. You say to this guy, well, all these starving orphans, what are you going to do about those starving orphans in Bavaria? Well, thinks about it for a moment. He hasn't ever thought about it before. I can't do anything about them. And you know, at that moment, this isn't by necromancy or anything. He has just sorted out all the starving orphans of Bavaria for his randomity. You would be amazed. You would be amazed how well, easily, it works out. But thereafter, these will crop up. I finally be saying all those damned orphans. Ah. I don't know how much time goes by, but might be quite a few years or lifetimes or something of the sort. Like he's all of a sudden operating huge bridge kitchens for orphans. He's propitiating them. Why? Well, they have more force and power than he has, of course. Why do they? Well, because he sorted them out for randomity. Why did he sort them out for randomity? Well, because he said he couldn't do anything about them. Well, but he knows this is because they had more force than he had. This doesn't follow, does it? And yet, in life, that is the center of aberration. See? A fellow says, well, I can't do anything about that. And then later on he says, you know, that thing has more force than I have. This morning I was telling you something about who was the most forceful and powerful person you knew in your childhood. And you suddenly come to find out it was you. The person that you selected out was actually a pretty apathetic fellow. Now, thus it works out. You say, well, that person has more power than I have. Why? Because I can't do anything about him. Supposing you had around you a gardener who would get drunk and get fired, and he was your friend as a child. And yet he would get drunk and get fired, and you'd somehow or other get him back on the job again or worm around other people's confidences or something of the sort. And it left quite a hole in your life every time this employee went off on a binge. And you failed repeatedly ever to straighten him out. That is another person's problem. Very simple. It's just this other person's problem, and you're trying to use some kind of persuasion or something to bring him back into line. You finally wind up with the full belief that the person had more power and force than you did, simply because you could not cause an effect upon him. So cause and effect comes in, and we have said, can't do anything about him, and then it follows automatically, he must have more force and power. Therefore, we've got to shift valence. See? You say, who was the most forceful person? You say this person years afterwards who had this gardener, and you say to this person now, who was the most persuasive person you knew? The gardener. See? Gardener never persuaded anybody in his life to do anything. But the kid was very persuasive in trying to keep the gardener's job. But the kid lost, that is to say, he had to finally say, I can't do anything about the gardener, which means I do not have any force with regard to the gardener, which means also the gardener is 50% other determinism than He's 100% other determinism. And there's the way the dwindling spiral sets in down the universe. And there's the way space sets in. People keep getting out of space, moving out of it, saying, well, I can't do anything about it. They have various mechanisms for not doing anything about it. Far from explaining death, this is not offered as an explanation of death. Death is not senior to this explanation. Death is junior to this explanation. Death is simply that all-out declaration, I can't do anything about it. Theoretically, if you could make somebody say with great positiveness, with sufficient positiveness, I can't do anything about life, he would die, pang. If you could just make him say, I can't do anything about it hard enough, ha, he's gone. Now, this works in very intimately with auditors. You have to learn that your chatter to the preclear of, well, now, how do you feel? How do you feel, and what do you think now, and that sort of thing. You must learn that this is expected, but that the only real reason an auditor would have to engage in this chatter was simply so the preclear would put enough attention on him so the auditor could look at him and then make up his own mind how the preclear wants. Yeah, you're never going to find out from preclear. Just never. They're not going to tell you. They'll give you a good inkling of it, and so forth. But if you were to get them up to exceeding a power level, which was allowable or something of this sort, it's doubtful they'd let you in on it. Same way, when they're way downscale, if it seems better for them to be sick than well, and if they're trying to succumb, they're just going to tell you all the time, straight out, that, oh, they just feel like the devil, they're terrible, and so forth. Not as a joke, I mean, they'll try to convince you of it. Because they've got a stake in it. Another reason.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
If they have any anxiety about you as an auditor processing them again, which is to say they want you to process them again, they feel terrible. In the same way, they will sometimes say they feel well when they simply don't want any more processing. In other words, they're just using mechanisms with which to handle an auditor. This has nothing to do with the state of case. But you can't look at a preclear and tell when he's stuck and where he's stuck. If he is stuck first, is this guy stuck on the track someplace, or if he's really in bad shape, and then if you can't tell whether or not you've done him any good simply by looking at him, you better do enough feeling of the corners and walls of rooms and bodies and so forth until you can look. Because it must be that you're just withdrawing your sight to some degree. You're saying there are other determinism, because you're trying to restore their other determinism, and yet you're saying at the same time, I'm taking responsibility for this person. And you're at the same time asking this person to be in effect. So, if you don't keep the picture pretty straight, it gets muddy. And you're liable all of a sudden to wind up thinking that, gee, you certainly would make a good preclear, but you're a terrible auditor. Why, the people that you know, the smart, clever people that you know, they're all preclears. These preclears were the smartest and cleverest people that you ever heard of. See? Merely by continuously selecting them out, being an effect of them, asking them how they are, and then taking that for the real answer. That's real grim. You should know. For instance, I have no intentions of going on with this case, because this case will live now. It's just that difference with this case that I was processing this morning. She walked in the auditing room maybe 5 days ago or 4 days ago, whatever it was. Seems like a long time ago. About 5 days ago.
She walked into the auditing room. Her eyes were very washed out, lifeless, and no spark in them. No sparkle. There was no sign. You know, you look at a pair of eyes, and you ever see a fish that's just been caught and is dead? You know, he's still got a little sheen to his eyes, but they're sure dead eyes. Those preacher's eyes were like that. But more importantly, their color was a very, very, very faint hazel with a white rim around the cornea. That is a blurred rim all the way around the cornea of the eye. The preacher's eyes have turned to dark brown, and today turned from fairly dark brown to almost black brown. See? And the life came back into him a couple of three sessions ago. She's getting better. She's getting destructively argumentative. It would never have occurred to her to have argued before. Much of anything. She was just solid apathy. Now she's getting very argumentative. Why should I mock myself up that way? That won't do me any good. I don't think that way. And she's going on at a vast rate here, telling me how she's... And also, well, I don't know. Let's know better. You should tell me whether I'm certain or not. I'm not going to tell myself whether I'm certain or not. You're supposed to tell me whether I'm certain. Oh, you don't know whether I'm certain or not. Well, I guess you don't know then, do you? This complete bombardment, you see, and tirade of this. Well, I've actually gotten her out, gotten her attention out on the outside environment so that she's in communication. Furthermore, she's not non-sequitur. She was disassociating when she came here. And she's not disassociating now. But she's playing being pathetic and not getting well, and I'm so miserable at a mad rate. Now she's back there playing that game again. You see, she's got a play, and she's written the script for it long, long years ago, and she's playing this play. Well, that's nothing to do with it. I mean, actually, she isn't doing this thing to magnitude. But this is a symptom of recovery. Combativeness. Argumentativeness. An unwillingness to put up every mock-up just because the auditor says to put it up. And so on. You can very often see a case cross this line, and the case doesn't know it's crossing anything. The case is just thinking he's mad, or this case has been in apathy for years, and today he's scared. The case is getting there. It isn't that you should immediately jump in there and pitch. Well, now, if you were to ask such a case as this, just bluntly ask the case like this, now, are you feeling any better? And then count on the reply as the answer. Oh, no. No? No, I feel terrible today. A few days ago, she was saying, yes, I feel all right. Don't hit me. See, that kind of... I feel all right. No, I don't feel any better. No, it didn't do me any good. This is typical. This, you see, what you're dealing with there is observable phenomena. You can see. And if you still have to be told, and if words have more effect on you than your own eyes, this gets more space processing. And then mock up a whole block of machines which tell you what's true. And have other people mock up machines which tell you what's true. And keep making them disappear until you cut out that automaticity. Where word replaces observation. A man is done. He's not just done in, as an auditor. He's done in life. Because he goes down the street and there's dear old Mr. Fuzzyfoot down the street that loans money. And he says, no, Bill, I'm not going to foreclose today. No, don't think of it. I'm not going to attach your bank account or anything like that. Gets back to the office. He had 2 hours there. He could have drawn down his bank account. Get back to the office and it's been attached. Worse than that, goes down the street and he meets this girl. This girl says she's honest and truthful.
She says this, and she is his friend. He's all set now. Only it's simpler for him to cut his own throat. Here you have a good poker player. A good poker player is one who represses his own emotional pattern sufficiently so that it won't tell anybody else anything, and in the meanwhile can observe beautifully other people. Well, playing poker is a downhill run. Not because the odds are against one, but it simply works out that every time you try to repress your emotions so that you can get somebody else to emote, you wind up with having repressed your emotions. It's real weird. What business do you have thinking inside this body anyhow and making it mirror everything you think? Well, instead of repressing the emotions, just don't emote in that spot. That's easy. That's simplicity itself. Now, that makes an awful liar out of a body. But I don't know that the body ever did tell the truth. The body actually runs on an inverted vector continually. The body loves this inflow, inflow, inflow. It can't stand it unless it gets an inflow. It's so hungry for inflows that if you will sometimes run out some of its outflows, you will find the fellow getting just starved, unimaginably starved, for some more inflow. So let's put together automaticity and randomity and responsibility. See how these three things integrate one against the other, and see how they start. They start because one wants some action or motion which will surprise or interest him. And then after a while, he has cut down his force that much. He starts cutting down his force by saying, so-and-so, well, I can't do anything about it. He's saying at the same time, it's not mine. And he gets the idea of ownership out of the idea of randomity. That's others. Now, if he's against others, he's having a rough time. These people that go around fuming and snarling and saying how much they hate other people and worrying and worrying and worrying about what other people are going to do to them or what they're going to do about other people are in a perilous situation. They just got through selecting out the human race for randomity. Oh, brother. Let's just take the whole race and say, here we go, randomity. That will wind up, every other being in the world has more force than I have, the person will have to say eventually. That's pretty grim. You don't seem to think it's funny. But believe me, it isn't. This mix-up whereby individuality and fame, for instance, a person can't be an individual unless he is famous or something like that. Can't be an individual unless he has great peculiarities or unless he's wearing a sandwich and going up and down the street in the same way of wearing a great name. You might as well. It's just the same thing as wearing a sandwich, Lauren. There isn't much to that. You get into a bad state of otherness. Now you'll find, by the way, that some preclears, you just ask them to change their name to Dopes. Just at random. Say, why don't you be Dopes for 3 days? The fellow would feel much better. I had a preclear do this one time, and he came back that evening, however. This one didn't work out too well as a test case, because he came back that evening and told me carefully his name was not Dopes. After that, we processed him with what room? So, a person will change around, having selected out a lot of things for randomity. He will then have to select around in environments until he can find an environment which he hasn't taken out as a random environment completely.